Hermeticism is a philosophical and esoteric tradition based primarily upon the writings attributed to Hermes Trismegistus, which were considered to be of great importance during both the Renaissance and the Reformation. Renaissance is a French word meaning rebirth, referring to a period in European history just after the Middle Ages, marked by a revival in classical learning and wisdom. The Reformation was a major Christian movement during the 16th century that challenged the Catholic Church and Pope, resulting in the split of Protestantism. This was a time where freedom of religion and thought were new and dangerous concepts, and so esoteric material was veiled in an astrological or alchemical context and required an understanding of symbolism to be properly decoded and understood. In 1908, a book was published under the pseudonym Three Initiates, titled The Kybalion, a study of the Hermetic philosophy of ancient Egypt and Greece. It focused on the seven Hermetic principles, and I'll go over each one of them in this presentation, but first let's discuss Hermes Trismegistus, which means Hermes three times great, the source credited with the material. The number three is thought to refer to the three planes of existence, the physical, the mental, and the spiritual. While some scholars do hold that there was a real person or composite of several distinct figures, most argue that he was a blend of several mythological deities. Regardless of his precise identity, he has come to symbolize magic, mysticism, the mysteries, and alchemy. The earliest Egyptians named him Thoth, the scribe of the gods. He was deified by the Greeks as the god of wisdom. The ancient Romans named him Mercury, and he was called Termes by the Etruscans, depicted with the same distinctive attributes as Hermes and Mercury, a caduceus and winged sandals, symbolizing his role as messenger between man and the gods. According to texts discovered in Egypt in 1945 in a town called Nag Hammadi, Hermetic mystery schools or Hellenistic mysticism, like the earlier Egyptian mystery schools involving Thoth, involved teachings that in modern terminology is called Gnosticism. This school of thought was seen as heresy by the Roman Church and was forced to go underground. So the term Hermetic is also equivalent to occult or hidden, and in many cases was punishable by death. The basic doctrines deal with the mastery of mental forces. In other words, one learns how to change their reality by changing their mind. The word gnosis is Greek for knowledge, but implies a spiritual understanding or awareness, rather than something one learns from reading books. In fact, the Gnostic state refers to an altered state of consciousness, which is achieved through various taboo activities, which range from rhythmic music and dance, to taking psychoactive substances, focused meditations, and orgiastic rituals. The goal of this altered state is to bypass the filter of the conscious mind, and it's in this sort of trance that one allegedly has access to not only greater psychic awareness, but a greater external paranormal influence, which can also be defined as magic. The occultist Aleister Crowley had also argued that the key to magic was an altered state of consciousness, whether attained through meditation, sexual practices, or the use of drugs. That said, the seven principles laid out in the Kybalion make no mention of these practices. I simply include them in this presentation to give a broader historical understanding and context of the subject of Hermeticism, Gnosticism, alchemical mystery schools, and secret societies. It's through secret initiation that one becomes aware of these deeper aspects of ecstatic gnosis, which are altered states achieved through activities such as intense arousal, dancing, chanting, fasting, or even flagellation, which is the act of beating the body with special implements such as whips or rods. Different sects focus on different techniques, but the goal was always to bypass the ego and access the subconscious, or what Carl Jung refers to as the collective unconscious mind. Historically, Hermetic teachings were passed down orally and maintained in strict secrecy. Although the teachings appear in many religious philosophies, they are veiled in symbolism in an effort to avoid persecution. According to the Kybalion, quote, "We have the truth still with us, but it is not found in books to any given extent. It has been passed along from lip to ear. When it was written down at all, its meaning was veiled in terms of alchemy and astrology, so that only those possessing the key could read it all right. The students of comparative religions will be able to perceive the influence of the Hermetic teachings in every religion worthy of the name. The first of the seven principles is that of mentalism. The law of mind states that everything is mental in nature, and that everything in the universe is created by thought or mind. There's nothing that exists in the material universe where this is not the case. Our actions arise from thoughts, even if many of them are on a subconscious level. What we think, we shall become or attract. Thoughts become things. So when we have the right thoughts, the right actions will follow. It's our thoughts that create our reality. The second is the principle of correspondence. And I'm sure many of you are already aware of the famous saying, as above, so below, as below, so above. The ancients believed that the macrocosm is a reflection of the microcosm and vice versa. Hermetic philosophy considers the universe to be divided into three great classes of phenomena, known as the three great planes, physical, mental, and spiritual. The lowest point of which is undifferentiated matter, and the highest point is that of spirit. These planes are not really separate from each other, but work in correspondence with one another, where everything is connected in some way. This is meant in a literal sense, and demonstrable through quantum physics in what is called quantum entanglement, a phenomena that occurs when two particles become inextricably linked, and whatever happens to one immediately affects the other, regardless of how far apart they are. This is also known as spooky action at a distance, a phrase coined by Albert Einstein. The third principle is that of vibration, which states that all of life is vibration at different frequencies. Nikola Tesla was famous for this line of thought, and in a nutshell, it states that everything vibrates: trees, rocks, atomic particles, sounds, and even thoughts vibrate. Some things vibrate slower, and others vibrate at a higher frequency. High frequency vibrations are in the realm of the unseen, while lower frequency vibrations reside in the physical world, where our sight can translate the visible light. Water evaporating seems to be the best analogy for this one. When water is heated, the molecules become excited and vibrate so fast that the molecules break free of their bonds and turn into vapor. The atoms of water are not lost, they just move into a different state of vibration. Everything is in motion and vibrating, and nothing is at rest, even when that same water is apparently frozen as ice. So, to combine the concepts of the first three principles, our thoughts literally create a vibrational frequency, and this in turn will manifest our feelings, beliefs, attitudes, emotions, health, energy, and ultimately what we attract to ourselves in our lives, because energy follows thought. Fourth principle is of polarity. Everything is dual. Everything has poles. Everything has its pair of opposites. Like and unlike are the same. Opposites are identical in nature, but different in degree. Extremes meet. All truths are but half-truths. All paradoxes may be reconciled. Everything has its polar opposites. We live in a world of dualism. You cannot have hot without cold, light without dark, or good without evil. So what appears to be one extreme is actually part of a unified whole. So, for example, when looking at a thermometer, where does the hot stop and the cold begin? Though they're opposites, they're really the same thing, but merely a matter of degree. The same could be said of spirit and matter. They are really the same thing. Just like with water, when it is boiled, it evaporates into a gas and becomes subtle, like spirit. When it freezes, it becomes ice and resembles solid matter. Both are still made of water, just in different states, in different degrees. This same principle applies to all pairs of perceived opposites, including what's on the mental or emotional plane, just as love and hate, which are the same thing but at different degrees. The importance or value of this law comes in the understanding of one's ability to transmute and change the vibrations from one extreme to the other. When you learn how to transmute in this way, you're practicing the art of alchemy. While most associate alchemists of the Middle Ages with the transformation of base metal into gold, which may or may not have been true, the real heart of the activity was concealed to avoid death and involved changing one's thoughts and emotions into spiritual gold or soul energy. Hate can be converted by the power of your mind into love. Lust or carnal desire can be converted into creativity and life force or prana, chi, ki, or vril. And your physical body can theoretically be transformed into your light body, which in a religious context is referred to as ascension. This internal alchemy was banned and became hidden in secret societies, which hid the techniques under multiple layers of symbolism. Ultimately, feelings of separation can be turned into an experience of oneness, and it is in this state that gnosis is achieved and higher knowledge and esoteric abilities are attained. The next principle is of rhythm. Everything flows out and in. Everything has its tides. All things rise and fall. The pendulum swing manifests in everything. The measure of the swing to the right is the measure of the swing to the left. Rhythm compensates. This law speaks to the cyclical nature of life. What flows in must flow out. What goes up must come down. Seasons change, summer will become winter, and by understanding the ebb and flow of nature, one can enjoy the fruits of the highs while lessening or neutralizing the inevitable lows. Nothing stands still. Everything is being born, growing, dying. The very instant a thing reaches its height, it begins to decline. The law of rhythm is in constant operations. So, while the alchemist or hermeticist cannot escape or prevent certain realities from taking place, he or she tries to master their reaction to events by maintaining a degree of detachment to create a state of consciousness that is not as susceptible to the falling seasons of our life. The master does this consciously and by the use of his will, and attains a degree of poise and mental firmness almost impossible of belief on the part of the masses who are swung backward and forward like a pendulum. The masses of humanity live on a mental and emotional roller coaster. The idea is to attain a state of consciousness of divine indifference, even-mindedness, and inner peace. This balanced state might sound boring, but it's actually more like an eternal feeling of bliss. The idea is to stay even-minded and consistent, whether you have profit or loss, pleasure or pain, victory or defeat, rejection or praise. The goal being to attain a point of objectivity or divine attachment and to remain neutral and not get caught up in the polarities. If you attend a sporting event and strongly associate yourself with one team, you then subject yourself to the emotional highs and lows when that team wins or loses. Now, I understand that this excitement is why people enjoy following sports in the first place, but it's just an example to illustrate that you participate to the degree that you are subjected to the swing of the pendulum by your own attachment to any particular outcome. Suffering comes from one's attachments or misplaced points of view. Next, we have the principle of cause and effect. Every cause has its effect. Every effect has its cause. Everything happens according to law. Chance is but a name for law not recognized. There are many planes of causation, but nothing escapes the law. There's no such thing as accidents, and this universe seems to be governed by certain laws. There are physical laws, emotional laws, mental laws, and spiritual laws. It is possible to rise to a higher plane of consciousness, thereby, rather than playing the role of victim, one can be at cause rather than effect. The key is mastery of one's mind, which leads to mastery of emotions, desires, and appetites of the physical body. Most people are a victim to the opinions of others, limiting thoughts, negative emotions, social engineering, and subconscious programming. If your thoughts cause your reality, then your thinking must be submissive to your soul instead of your ego. Unfortunately, most people do not live in alignment with their true soul's purpose or desire, and have been manipulated by corporate and governmental entities through the media, movies, music, celebrities, sports, news, and even things like porn, which all contain subconscious programming and social engineering, whether we're consciously aware of it or not. That's why it's wise to be selective in what one exposes themselves to, especially in situations where there isn't much of a choice, like schools, which unfortunately no longer teach people how to think, but rather try to dictate what one must think based on a political agenda. How many of your thoughts and opinions are truly your own, and how many were skillfully and subtly planted into your mind through the media that you consume? Finally, we have the principle of gender, which is probably one of the most misunderstood. Everything has a yin and yang. On the physical plane, this can be interpreted as possessing a male or female body. However, psychologically, each person is androgynous with both male and female qualities. This can be understood as saying we all have a right and left side of the brain. But it's deeper than that, as this principle also applies to the emotional, mental, and spiritual aspects of ourselves. The idea here is balance and unification, what Buddhists call the middle way. But unfortunately, this principle has become aberrated in many occult circles, which promote a literal and material interpretation of this concept, rather than something to do with an internal balance. When we look at this through the lens of Greek mythology, Hermes and Aphrodite had a son called Hermaphroditos that exhibited both male and female aspects merged into one. Hermaphroditos was depicted as a winged youth with usually female thighs, breasts, and style of hair, and a male member. The name is obviously a union of Hermes and Aphrodite, where we get the term hermaphrodite, and synonymous with androgyny, a concept also present in other figures, such as the famous Baphomet, that was said to be worshipped by the Knights Templar. Of course, the Baphomet, while having both male and female parts, has the head of a goat. We see the goat in ancient Egypt as the goat of Mendes and the Greek god Pan. To gain some insight into why this particular animal was selected as a symbol, let us read a passage from a book called Magic, Book 4, by Aleister Crowley. Quote, "The devil does not exist. A devil who had unity would be a god. The devil is, historically, the god of any people that one personally dislikes. This serpent, Satan, is not the enemy of man, but he who made gods of our race, knowing good and evil. He bade, know thyself, and taught initiation. He is the devil of the Book of Thoth, and his emblem is Baphomet, the androgyne, who is the hieroglyph of arcane perfection. He is therefore life and love. But moreover, his letter is Ein, the I, so that he is light. And his zodiacal image is Capricornus, that leaping goat whose attribute is liberty." So what Crowley is saying is that Baphomet represents a union of opposites and is symbolic of a magical child produced as a result of sex magic. So in this context, the child is not a physical baby, but the manifestation of intense mental thought onto one point or goal, specifically at the point of climax. Although probably an oversimplification, this is essentially what is called magic, spelled with a K, and Crowley did not invent it. This practice predates recorded history. So you might be asking yourself, what does this have to do with a goat, or more specifically, the sign Capricorn? Well, Capricorn, which is Latin for horned goat, starts December 21st, and the same way that Gnostic secrets were hidden in alchemy, or chemistry, it was also hidden in astrology, or astronomy, which not only recorded the movement and cycles of celestial bodies, but held a deeper esoteric meaning for those that understood the symbology. During the winter solstice, starting December 21st or 22nd, and lasting for 3 days, the day is at its shortest and then gets longer each day. It is a symbolic representation of a death and rebirth of the sun, a reversal of the gradual lengthening of the nights and shortening of the days. There are many other symbols for this rebirth and resurrection, which I won't get into now, such as the phoenix, the symbolic bird that dies in the flame of fire only to be reborn from its ashes, the serpent that sheds its skin and renews itself, or is in a circle eating its tail, called the Ouroboros, the egg, the lotus flower, salamanders that are able to regenerate limbs and tails, just to name a few. In the context of esoteric Buddhism, Hinduism, Kabbalah, Gnosticism, Taoism, Hermeticism, Rosicrucianism, Sufism, and even esoteric Christianity, the rebirth has to do, at least in part, with the proper harnessing and transmutation of sex energy. And that's why we get terms like horny devil. The act of spilling the cup of Hermes, so to speak, which is another way of saying eating the forbidden fruit, which represents an overindulgence in carnal activity, is equated with a spiritual death, a loss of life force, and the participation in these same activities, but in a way that does not waste or expel the life force, is said to lead to an awakening, enlightenment, opening of the third eye, and any other number of terms alluding to a spiritual resurrection. It goes hand in hand with the seven hermetic principles, a number which is sacred in the occult, and besides having to do with sacred geometry, speaks to the seven chakra centers in Kundalini Tantra. Of course, this esoteric knowledge takes some practice, as it involves specific techniques, which I won't get into now, but I've included some links in the description for those that are interested in learning more. My name is Robert Sepper. I'm an anthropologist. My published work is available on Amazon. My books make a great gift. If you'd like to support my work, you can do that through patreon.com. There should be a link in the description section for those that are interested. I appreciate it. Thank you very much. Please hit the like button and subscribe for future updates. As always, I look forward to reading your thoughts, so kindly leave me a comment below. Please have a wonderful weekend, and I hope to see you again soon.